Good afternoon. I want to welcome everybody here today. Thank you so much for being here with us. I've got a few introductions I want to make. My name is Randy McGregor. I'm the fire chief for the city of Bryan. Up here to my right, I want to recognize some people here as well. They're available here to answer any questions you may have. Right here is Kelly Kistner. He's the deputy state fire marshal. To his right is Chief Steve Bass from Grapevine Fire Department. He was part of the recommendations and findings portion of this report. Mark McFerrin, our fire marshal, who headed up our internal investigation. Back here, I want to recognize a couple of people too. Lieutenant Dean Shirley, State Fire Marshal's office. Both Dean and Kelly were here during the investigation at the Knights of Columbus Hall. Also, Assistant Chief Daryl Brown here from Grapevine, and Chief Mike Wisco from Galveston Fire Department. Thank all of you for being here. I want to just talk about a couple things real quick. As we've talked about for the last 14, 15 months, just the impact that this event had on everybody here, especially our family here. Most devastating event we've ever had to face. We're in the business of facing difficult situations, but as you can imagine, we've never faced one such as this. And throughout this time, from the fire to the memorial services, all the way up through the day, it's just a lot that's been on our hearts, a lot of things that we've had to deal with, to go through, and that continues on. But it has been an opportunity to really show a lot of people what we are, who we are, and I'm very proud of that. I want to thank, again, going back to the night of the fire, some of the assisting agencies here locally, the College Station Fire Department, the Brazos County Fire Departments, those that came out, the law enforcement and EMS, St. Joseph's EMS, that assisted at the scene. This has been a journey, and we've had a lot of help, and we're very grateful. I want to thank some of these gentlemen here today and others who have been in contact throughout this time, and that's the members of the fire service, specifically across the state of Texas and the nation. Certainly the Brotherhood has made its presence here throughout this time to all of us, and we're just extremely grateful. And again, to thank the community. Here locally, we have wonderful people. We could not have gotten through this alone. The support started the night the fire happened, and it has not stopped. And we're just so grateful. Just a wonderful group of people. The support, the prayers sent our way, they have been felt. And I just want to say thank you. Today, we're going to discuss the report the State Fire Marshal's Office has put out on the Knights of Columbus Hall fire. You know, we're going to acknowledge some shortcomings, but I also want to tell you there was a whole lot more things that went good, and some very incredible things happened, much more than the shortcomings. I want to talk about immediately after the fire, once everything unfolded, days within the fire when we felt the impact of what had happened that night. We as an organization had to take a look to see, where do we go, what do we do? We're in a state of shock, trying to figure out what happened, what are we going to do to prevent this from happening, and just trying to process it all. But our entire organization came together, and from day one, we had one goal in mind, that we've got to make every effort and take every opportunity to do our best to ensure that this thing, an event like this, never happens again. And we're going to talk about some of the things we've done since then that are in practice today. But from the very beginning, our biggest goal has been to ensure what we can do that this type of event does not happen. With the release of the report, there's been a lot of the shortcomings, if you will, put in the paper and such, and we've looked at those, and we will address each one of those through your questions and other ways. But I want to talk a little bit about where we were as an organization on the night of that fire. We were a very good organization. We had a lot of things in place that night, and that night we felt like we were as prepared as we could be to encounter any situation. Some examples. We take the safety of our personnel as our paramount goal. Nothing's more important than our people. But for years we've had many things in place that have put us where we were, where we thought we needed to be. In 2001, state legislator passed Senate Bill 382, which mandated many requirements on career fire departments. One of those being the two-in, two-out rule. And for those of you not familiar, basically it says if we send two people into a dangerous environment, we have to have two people standing outside ready to go in and retrieve them if the problems are encountered. The minimum was two set back then. Immediately, actions were taken. We made our minimum staffing on our rapid intervention teams, or the term RIT team, which you've heard, to be three. We wanted to go above what the minimum was. We also made it an entire engine company, along with an officer, to ensure there was a supervisor with them, to ensure there was some experience with that crew, that if they are ever needed, they would perform at their best. For many years, we've been equipped to perform RIT operations. For years, we've had what they're called RIT packs, which are basically air supplies specifically designed for performing a RIT rescue, getting air to somebody, if that's the best choice. We've had extensive RIT training throughout the years. Again, this is something we've taken very serious. We've prepared for events like that night. Also, too, administratively, many years ago, we made the decision that while a RIT team is only required when entering into a dangerous environment, in this situation, inside of a structure, it was not required during a defensive operation where you're basically fighting the fire from the outside. We felt the importance to ensure that RIT team was in place regardless of what type of fire it was. And that has been our position for years. We value our people. Even as before our RIT team can get set up, coming in as part of the arriving companies, we took it a step further. Sometimes crews have to go in immediately, especially in life situations. And we've been set up where our ambulance crews who respond get there typically one of the first units. We have them set up as what we call a standby team. They get dressed out, all the gear, they're ready to go, just to cover that time until that engine company can arrive that is designated the RIT team. We've tried to cover every angle to be ready to go in the event something like this were to happen. Also, to our protective clothing. Our protective clothing paid off that night in many regards. It's always been our policy for many years, nothing here recent, that would always provide our firefighters the best protective clothing we could. And they had it on that night. And we're thankful we made those choices early on. Also, too, we'll have some discussions about our safety officer, but I want to make a couple of points about that. As an organization, we are very fortunate to have a full-time safety officer. Our EMS supervisor serves as that full-time safety officer. He's on shift 24/7, ready to respond immediately to any type of structure fire or other dangerous situation. Upon their arrival, they immediately assume that role of safety officer to ensure operations are going as they should, report any dangerous situations, and maintain the safety of our people. We've had that position in place since 2008. We made it a goal back then that that's something, again, we want to protect our people, ensure they're as safe as they can be. We're fortunate because many departments our size, and even larger, do not have a safety officer. Many times they have to pull someone who's standing to the side or wait for somebody to come in later and assume that role. And we've placed a big priority on that for many years. In the report, it talks about our BSTI, or our Basic Structural Tactical Initiative. I want to talk about that too. We've had this in place for many years. If you're not familiar, it's essentially a blueprint of operations when responding to a structure fire. It's based on order of arrival. Depending on what unit gets there and which order, their duties are already assigned. There's no waiting to see what am I going to do or waiting for someone to tell me what to do. Just by them arriving in the order they arrive in, they know their jobs. This has proved very helpful in many situations, avoids confusion, and even in a couple of situations when our communication systems failed us, tasks still got done because they were predetermined. We've been very proud of that. That does provide flexibility for changing conditions, but everybody responding to a call, knowing their order of arrival, they already know what their assignments are, and they get on those immediately. At this time, we're going to open it up for questions. Again, I will answer many. If you have questions specifically for one of these gentlemen here, you're welcome for that too. I'll open it up.
Compare the emotions, how the report's been released to the days after the fire.
You know, emotions, the word emotions is very tough for all of us here. I think we've experienced everyone. The sadness, the disbelief when it happened. We've also experienced some extreme joy, seeing two of our members continue to progress. It's been a roller coaster, without a doubt. You know, the report comes out, it takes us back to that night, which is obviously emotional for everybody. Our viewpoint is, you know, we want to look at it, we want to look at the report, we want to welcome this, and it's been our goal since day one to do whatever we have to do to ensure this doesn't happen again. And we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But, you know, it's going to provide some closure for us, hopefully. This is something we need to do, and we're going to address them and have addressed it. But again, it takes us back. And anything that does take us back is very emotional.
How much of the report was expected? What was in the report that you didn't expect?
We did a thorough investigation ourselves, and I want to just give thanks to the Bryan Fire Marshal's office, Fire Marshal McFerrin specifically. He has spent hundreds and hundreds of hours analyzing this from every angle. Many days he came in, he spent a lot of time at home just staying up late, going over every bit of evidence, trying to determine what happened, what we could do to prevent it. We had very good knowledge of what the report would be. Working with the Fire Marshal's office was a very pleasant thing. Something we didn't want to do, but having to go through it, it was a very good working relationship, and we're grateful for that. But the report is fairly straightforward. Again, no surprises for us. We knew just from our own investigations what some of the shortcomings were. This question was, why did we make the decision to go inside? You know, it's a very good question. Every time we pull up to a structure fire or any situation, one of the first things we're going to do is evaluate what's going on. And that night, one of the things that were in place that every company officer did was they did what we call a walk around, a risk assessment of the building. They walked around the building, looked at everything going on, the condition of the smoke, amount of fire, etc., to make decisions on how we were going to approach this. To go in a building is not uncommon at all. We do it a lot. Commercial structures do offer some different challenges, but essentially we look at it. They looked at it that night, Lieutenant Wallace did, as well as the other company officers. Based on the amount of fire showing, based on the amount of smoke, this seemed like a fire to walk into, go put it out, and come back out the door. After assessment was made, the decision was made to go inside and put out the fire. We don't disagree with anything, again, and I want to tell you, it's important to point out, and I want our members to know this, and I've told many of them. You know, the report itself, it's a good report in the sense that the information they collected through interviews, through evidence, etc., is what made their report. We know there's a lot more that happened that just simply wasn't conveyed to them. You can't convey everything, again, through interviews. They took down what was given to them. And they wrote the report. I don't disagree with the report. You know, there you can look at these things some different ways and realize, well, yes, maybe not again, but overall, no disagreements at this point, you know, where we are today. Well, I tell you, without a doubt, the state report did say some very good, nice things about us, and I do believe they're spot on. But I tell you what, you look around this bay right here and look at the men and the women of the Bryan Fire Department, they're an incredible group, and they performed at exceptional levels that night, especially when Lieutenant Wallace called in a distress call and we had to go in and get him. The heroism that night, unparalleled, unimaginable. The job these guys did that night, it cost Lieutenant Pickard his life. Firefighter Manti, Firefighter Moran sustained heavy burns. But you know, it's just a part of this story that wouldn't come out in that report. the heroism. It's unbelievable. In my career, I've never seen anything like it. We've been told from fire departments and fire service personnel across the country, it's the most amazing thing they've ever seen. You know, I will convey, and I want to talk a little bit about the heroism. That night, when Lieutenant Wallace called in and he needed assistance, nobody hesitated. The incident commander, Battalion Chief Joe Androsik, looked at the RIT team who was standing there prepared, trained, and ready to go, said, go get them. Lieutenant Pickard went up to the building. He did a quick scan, looked at it. He'd already done a walk around, and he made the decision to go get them, and they were going after him. It was quite evident that they were not going to leave Eric in there. They went straight to Eric. They performed exceptionally. They did just what they'd been trained to do as a RIT team. They followed his hose based off of Lieutenant Wallace's information, and they went straight to him and found him. Then immediately gathered him up and was bringing him out. One of the most important stories, again, that's not in the report that needs to be conveyed is the bravery, the dedication of these men. When they had Lieutenant Wallace, they were bringing him across the bingo room. It was during that time that the room flashed. Engine 2 was down the hallway into the dance hall area. The lieutenant on Engine 2 saw the room flash, saw it a sustained flash over. He came back up the hallway to look in there. He knew the RIT team was in there. At that time, they were trying to keep the fire off of them from the dance hall area coming into the bingo room. What he witnessed was incredible. Those three men had Lieutenant Wallace. They were consumed by fire. I'm not talking about next to the fire rolling over their heads. They were on fire. The incredible part was, and he witnessed, those three men never stopped trying to get him out. They never relented in their efforts to remove Lieutenant Wallace from that building. They refused to let go of him. Knowing they're on fire, knowing their own personal risk here, they could have easily dropped him. They could have easily hit the floor. They could have easily ran out. They didn't. They stayed with him. They stayed with him to a point they collapsed from their burn injuries. They gave everything they had to give up to and including their lives. I don't really know what else to say about that. How can you ask more of any human being, any firefighter? We know we work in dangerous environments. We're trained to work in dangerous environments. We train for situations just like that. In the back of our minds, though, we hope and we pray we never have to encounter that. They did. It's hard to imagine what was going through their minds. But all three made the decision to not give up. After those three were pulled out of the building, severely burned, they started receiving medical attention. As they were being treated, Lieutenant Wallace still remained in the building. Even on the outside, Lieutenant Pickard expressed extreme emotion and almost anger that they did not get him out. He was disappointed in himself that although on fire and going until he could not go any further, he was disappointed that they did not get him out. And he was telling their paramedics exactly where Lieutenant Wallace was. Go get him. He's still there. Don't leave him in there. Even with the burn injuries he received, he was still more concerned about his brother firefighter than he was himself. We had other crews enter into the building to get Lieutenant Wallace out. There were seven other members. The crews of Truck 1, Engine 2, and Engine 4 went back in that building At this point, there's heavy fire throughout the building. They did not have to go back in there, but they made the decision not to leave their brother behind. They did not know Eric's condition at the time, nor did anybody. But they said there's a chance. We're going to go get him. You know, as I mentioned, arriving at the scene myself, right as the RIT team was coming out, Assistant Chief Terry Barnett and I went up to the front door while these seven guys are still in there. Seeing this building on fire, knowing there's eight members of our family still in there, was a very unique situation. As I told you, you train about these things, you prepare for them, all these different scenarios you can do to prepare yourself to make decisions in situations like that. But standing there knowing that this building could consume all of them very rapidly, you're trying to make the decision, along with the incident commander, to pull them out or not, was extremely, extremely difficult. We don't want anybody else hurt that night. These seven men have families of their own. But we knew if we pulled them out, we knew Eric's outcome for sure then. We all know Eric's the father of five. You can't train for that situation. I think right at the time everybody realized we were going to have to pull them out, we're so thankful that they came out of the door, all of them, with Lieutenant Wallace. Knowing these men and who they are, to be completely honest, I think whether myself, Chief Barnett, or Chief Androsnik would have ordered them out of that building, I'm not real sure they would have followed that order. It was evident they were not going to leave one of our own behind. And as I talk about heroism, too, I want to talk about somebody else. That gentleman standing right back here, Battalion Chief Joe Androsnik, who was the incident commander that night. Joe is a very, very good fire officer, very experienced. Again, we talk about the training you prepare yourself for. I've never been in his shoes in a critical situation as he was that night. The decisions he had to make to ensure we got to Eric, to ensure the RIT team received medical treatment, to ensure Eric came back out, to ensure the safety of those other seven, all the while trying to manage a firefighting operation. It took extreme courage on his part to do the job he did. It's easy to say, I would have done this, I would have done that, but I just believe in all of these responders' positions. I don't think you'll ever really know it unless you're in those shoes. I could not be more proud of our organization. Not just that night, but through the days, weeks, months, and even over a year now where we are today. We did have some shortcomings, and we will address those. We have addressed those. But I can tell you this, from that night before that fire, during that fire, the time up till right now, I'm extremely proud. And I stand behind every one of them. Those are just some of the things, you know, that can't be related to a report. It describes some of it, but what's on paper is one thing, what happened out that night, out there that night, what these men did, the sacrifices they made. You can't put that on paper. You just can't. Other questions?
You listed some of the shortcomings. Have any of those been resolved prior to this report coming out? Anything they initially learned from that fire that automatically got put in place?
As I said earlier, our first and foremost goal after making sure everybody was okay and families were tended to was to address What happened? What can we do to make it better? We formed a committee of about 15 people from all ranks inside the organization, led by Assistant Chief Barnett, the operations chief. We went back and we analyzed every policy, every practice, no stone left unturned in how we operated emergency scenes. We compared that to our lessons learned through this event. We faced major fires many times in the past. We've faced critical situations. Lieutenant Wallace is not the first person to get lost in a building. Not at all. It was the first time we had to deploy a RIT team under such extreme circumstances. There were a lot of things that happened that night that after investigating, studying, we realized here's some things we need to do different. And again, at the end, I will go over those changes with you that we have made. We did not want to wait on any outside agency. We felt action was necessary immediately. Our people are our most important asset, and I'm very proud of that committee and everybody in our organization who has stepped up, who has acknowledged some changes that we made, have put them into practice, and all of those are in place as we speak right now. Yes, sir. Well, I tell you, I want to talk a little bit about the report itself. And now, Kelly, if you don't mind, maybe you could explain the purpose, if you will. These lessons learned are going to be shared, not only the state's report, but our own internal findings and such. But would you elaborate a little bit maybe on how that works?
Sure. The report itself, there's two reasons that we do it. And I will tell you the lesser of the two reasons is because we are mandated by the state legislature to do it. The most important reason that we do the reports is so that we can discuss the lessons learned, we can share them with the fire service, and we can work through the history of all of these reports to try and prevent any other loss of life with our fire service. And I think it's very important that as you look at the report, and having spent some time here that was very emotional with the Bryan Fire Department over those days, I quickly learned that Lieutenant Wallace and Lieutenant Pickard, they were there to save lives and serve the community. This report, because of what they gave, can continue to help save lives going forward. This is posted on our website through the State Fire Marshal's Office. Many of you have read it. The other thing is that myself and State Fire Marshal Keneally and some of our other staff, we do travel the state. We look at historical events from line of duty deaths, firefighter fatalities, and we're sharing those constantly across the state in different formats. So as far as the report, the real reason that we do it is to honor those who have lost their lives in the line of duty, and secondly, because the legislature says we have to. So we want to share that message. We want to make sure that it gets out there. Can tell you that this report has already been viewed outside of the state of Texas. There are people who look to Texas many times for these reports, and then they share them in other states. It's not uncommon as we go to conferences for fire chiefs from other countries to look at these reports. So the sacrifice that those two lieutenants made is going to have far-reaching positive effects on the fire service. And that's why we do it, is to put that safer future out there.
And to follow up, we've handed out, I believe, some of all the changes we've made. You know, these are not going to be just internal changes for us. Our goal is to get those out. We encountered a unique situation that night, very unique. There's been several leaders in the American Fire Service who have looked at these reports, have analyze the fire. Our goal is to reach out to all fire departments across the state and the country and share what we learned to help better prepare them if they were to ever encounter a similar situation, that they're as best prepared as they can be. Others? That's correct. No. Well, I tell you, if you want to look at that list, I'll go ahead and kind of address some of these things here. A couple of comments real quick. The Bryan Fire Department is very blessed to have the support it has from our city council, from our city management team. Prior to this fire, when I was appointed interim fire chief, the city manager and I started communications about addressing staffing. Himself, other city leaders, the city council have been very, very supportive throughout this event. Looking at this list here on the front page, it talks about a staffing increase. They wanted to go ahead and put it in a resolution, a council resolution back in June, but our goal is going to be to get four firefighters on each truck. In the report, it does address staffing shortages. Let me expand a little bit on that. Again, those are the words on the paper, but I want to talk a little bit about that. Up until the fire, we were running three firefighters per truck on each fire engine and on our ladder truck. And while that does not meet the national requirement, it's important to say that it is the common staffing on most cities our size and even some larger. There are a few out there that have four on each vehicle, but without a doubt, the most common staffing is three. We did well with three, no doubt. But many indications, research from across the country, those things would make up the national standards of four on a truck. It's just more efficient to operate, it increases safety, and our goal is to get four on each truck. The council did approve that. This past budget year, we added six firefighters. We brought our ladder truck up to a minimum of four. That has been in place since before Christmas. We're looking to add more personnel this coming budget year. We're going to start getting one more on each engine, and we'll work at that each year as financially feasible to get to where we need to be. Another thing, too, from this report, that we realize the need for a chief's aide. And that position is somebody who's at the back of the command vehicle, along with the incident commander, that assists in the sense of taking notes, logging down information, tracking where crews are, operating a mobile data terminal, tracking accountability, drawing a map of what's going on, just keeping track of all the information. Most departments don't have that position. They operate just how we operated that night with the one incident commander. And I go back, when I look at all this incident entailed, I just think what an incredible job Chief Androsic did managing everything that was going on that night and how he got everything done. But our goal is to get a full-time chief's aide as well. We'll train specifically in areas to perform the best in that position, help track what's going on, track accountability, and ensure everything that's needed to get done is getting done. We can also assist in monitoring communications to ensure nothing is missed on a radio. It's a very important task. We want to have that full time. I just want to stress again, from the night of the fire up through today, I've been contacted many times, individual council members, individual city leaders, along with hundreds of other people, offering their support, asking what can we do On behalf of the organization, I just want to say thank you. Going down the list, one of the things we realized too is we need to increase our ability to inspect commercial buildings. That need was recognized. We asked for an additional inspector. The city provided that to us. That person is on staff today. They're going through training with the goal of trying to increase how many inspections we can get done on buildings such as this and other occupancies similar. Going down through everything we had done, what we realized at night, looking at this list here, we've also increased the number of trucks we send to a fire. We realized several things. The importance of having a protective hose line on the RIT team in the event of a flashover as we encounter. I can tell you, Chief Bass will tell you, the other chiefs in the room will tell you, the typical RIT team is two or three people, and they stand there ready to go. We had three ready to go that night, well trained. We did not think about the potential of what could happen and what did happen inside the bingo hall. We initiated what we call a blocking line that goes to every fire now, that additional engine. We were sending three engines, a ladder truck, battalion chief, EMS supervisor, and an ambulance to every fire. We've increased that to four engines. And the crew of that fourth engine now, the lieutenant and the firefighter, come off the truck. They pull a hose line, standing ready to go beside the RIT team. If that RIT team is to be deployed, they have the protection of a hose line. It's not that we didn't think about that before, that others didn't either. But based on what happened, we realized the critical need. So what that essentially does is puts our RIT team to five people. The crew to go in and rescue is now five, including two company officers. Also, too, until we have the ability to go with a full-time chief's aide, the driver of that vehicle now reports to the command post and will act as that chief's aide, doing all the tasks I talked about. We realized, again, just how important that is, not only during working fires, but when you get into a critical life safety situation as we did, they're absolute. We also implemented a May Day mode of operations. As I spoke about where we were as an organization the night we came to that fire, we had many things in place, many very good policies, many very good practices. And I just want to say, these are not policies or practices that happened in the last year or two. This organization has structured its procedures around many years of experience that have come from many different people at all different levels of the organization. Many of those people who got us where we were that night have since left and retired. That also includes Greg and Eric. We had operations, mode of operations in place. Our offensive mode is where we're going to go inside to attack the fire. A defensive mode is fight it from the outside. We had a rescue mode that we practiced anytime we had a report of a civilian trapped in a building. Rescue mode bumped up additional resources automatically. It was a recall of chief officers to come assist at the scene. There was a change in tactics to where all companies were devoted to that rescue of that civilian trapped in a building. Once the rescue was made, resources were diverted back to providing protection for our people. We had many policies on the books and in place and practice concerning many operations. Many of those were followed that night. But looking back, we wanted to make sure that we knew what to do every time. We're thankful these situations are rare that they happen. But if I declare a Mayday mode now, just as the BSTI defines what they're going to do on a first alarm structure fire, the Mayday mode operations now assigns tasks. Everybody knows their task. It helps ensure that nothing is going to be missed. One of the benefits, too, moving down to the next change that we've implemented, is trying to have some relief for our firefighters time to rehab, especially during extreme temperature situations. The blocking line we have in place, the company fourth arriving engine staffs that. But as other crews fighting the fire go in, spend time in the building or outside of the building, they come out, they cool off, they rehab, they go over to the blocking line. When they're ready to go, they're back where they need to be. Then they go to the blocking line, they're briefed by the RIT team of everything, make sure everybody knows what's going on. And the crew initially assigned to that blocking line now goes in to assist with firefighting duties. By having this rotation, it reduces the fatigue of our personnel. Again, extremely critical during 100 degree days or very cold nights. This blocking line and RIT team remains in place until it's time to go home. One of the shortcomings in the report was the thermal imaging cameras. Two of the companies did not have them with them. They were provided. These gentlemen were not the first ones to leave a thermal imaging camera on the truck. It happens. It happens other places. But it's something we have to make sure doesn't happen. Thermal imaging camera is a very good tool. And while we had them available, the understanding that they would use them, we've now mandated that use. By mandating, it provides us an opportunity to come back and ensure as we critique fires to make sure that camera was with them. An interesting thing that we discovered that night, listening to the radio tape, another change we implemented, we realized how important the different hose colors were. Prior to that fire, trucks like here, two hoses up here, one was red, one was yellow. They're of a certain length. There's two on the back. One was red, one was yellow. We did that. We've had that for years that way. Just in case we had to find somebody on a hose, that hose color would help identify them. Well, that night, that proved very useful. If you heard the audio traffic, Lieutenant Wallace reported more than once he was on the red hose line. That enabled our RIT team to immediately go to the door, find the red hose line, and go straight to him. Realizing the need for a blocking line, realize there may be more than two hoses off of the truck. Most fires are handled with one hose line, not uncommon to pull two, but we know at minimum we're going to pull two. We changed all hoses to be the same length, 200 feet, to make sure they could reach each other. And now we have a red hose, a yellow hose, an orange hose, and a blue hose. And we require company officers, when they come off the truck, part of what they're announcing is what hose line they're going in. And that's documented down at the command post. If we encounter this situation again, while it wasn't an issue at this fire, if we had two red hoses going in the door, the question becomes which one? I think there's a lot to learn from that. It was an experience we realized we weren't prepared for, but we want to make sure there's no confusion in the future. Communications were an issue that night. A lot of information was relayed. Other information could have been relayed. But you talk about what's not in the report. One thing that's not in the report that did hinder communications was when Lieutenant Wallace became in contact with the fire, when the environment around him became extremely heated, one of the wires on his radio melted, and it caused a short in the radio. The emergency activation button on all the radios that a firefighter can push if they're in distress will activate at the dispatch office. Alarms go off. It identifies on the screen which specific radio it is, so we can follow up to make sure they're okay. Well, that short in that radio caused his button to keep reactivating. The dispatcher could reset it. It kept reactivating. And it did cause some issues, especially at the incident commander's level, of being able to talk to the companies. At that time, we were operating off of one tactical channel. For a long time, We move all of our serious incidents over to what we call a tactical channel off the main dispatch channel so that no calls or alarms are interrupting our operations. We realized that night, too, that should this happen again, we need to be able to address that. We reprogrammed our radios. We made our highest attack channel, channel 6, our RIT channel, our operations channel. We call it RIT, but it's for operations crews. That in the event we encounter a situation where we cannot communicate due to some type of failure, especially during a Mayday operation, the firefighter experiencing the Mayday will stay on that channel along with the RIT team, with the blocking line, and the rescue division officer, and try to communicate to him. All the other crews fighting the fire will move over to TAC 6 and have a clear channel unimpeded by any type of mechanical failure and maintain communications. Now, to go even further, we reprogram the radios where anytime the radio channel is changed, the audible voice comes over and will tell you what channel you're on. If the firefighting crews need to change channels in the middle of an operation with a mask on, gloves and everything, you can't be real sure if you don't hear it what channel you're on. We went one step further. Even if the audible voice that tells you what channel you're on isn't audible, we reprogrammed channel 6 all the way to the end of the dial as well. You can find it in two locations, either at channel 6 or roll around what's labeled channel 16. It's actually the same frequency as channel 6. And if they can't figure out what channel they're on, they can roll it all the way over to one side and know for certain they're on the right channel. Also, too, one of the changes we made, adding the additional personnel and such, is we did recognize the need for a rescue division officer. Trying to manage a working fire incident and a Mayday at the same time, it's overwhelming. Again, we're going to move to increase staffing, but during this time, our safety officer, who again responds 24/7 around the clock, if a Mayday is declared, that person will come to the command post, who is at a company officer level, and will become that rescue division officer. Another person will be appointed to look over safety. Their duty will be to move over to or to go stay on the channel with the Mayday firefighter, with the RIT team, with the blocking line, and other resources assigned, and they will manage that radio group while the incident commander is managing the fire. We require them to be standing side by side so they can have face-to-face communication of any one of the operations going on. All they got to do is look at each other and communicate what needs to be said. Upgrades in personal protective equipment. We felt like our gear performed very well that night, despite the losses. As I stated earlier, we have always, for years, bought the highest level of protection for our firefighters, the materials made, etc. And there is a debate in the fire service about how much protection do you need. Prior to this fire, we could understand the debate that, well, if you overprotect them, they may get in too deep, they may not realize their environment, and they may become overheated or consumed by high temperatures and not have enough heads up to get out. And that is a very good debate in the fire service. There's arguments both ways. But what we realized was our folks may have to get into situations of extreme temperatures. The RIT team going in that night, that's not something they would have done voluntarily to expose themselves to that type of environment. But they did it because they had to. Since then, we have upgraded our PPE even more, added extra protection. We want to ensure they're protected as well as they can be. all the while reminding them and training them to recognize situations if they're in too deep to start making their way out. Air supply. I would say it's a fair estimate, Chief Bash, you can help me here, that probably 90 to 95% of departments run 30-minute cylinders. Fair assessment? We have for years. The question came up, though, what if we would have had more air? What if Eric would have had more air? What we were doing is what we felt was right at the time, what the consensus of the fire service was for the most part. But our department members realized and suggested we need to go to a larger cylinder. We've upgraded all of our cylinders to 45 minutes now to provide an extra bit of air. They do make hour cylinders, but at some point you have to kind of draw a line of how long you want a firefighter operating before they come take a break. But the operations committee made the recommendation to move to those cylinders to provide more air in these extreme situations. And every air pack in our organization now has a 45-minute bottle along with extra cylinders. One of the things identified, too, the changes we made, and it's a problem throughout the fire service, Lieutenant Wallace called and asked for assistance getting more hose into the building. Not uncommon. Almost every fire. As I said earlier, we have some incredible people in our organization, and they presented an idea to us one day. They said that we found a hose load, we think, that works better. Said, try it out, report back. And without getting into the details of it, it's just the way the hose is loaded. It comes out on the ground into a bundle. It's coiled up, and when you advance it, as it loops out, it actually pushes the hose towards you. We modified our hose loads. All the trucks have that hose load now. And reports have been, since we've implemented that, that it does assist in getting that hose in the door or around a building if you're outside, whatever the case may be. Also, too, we've upgraded our high-rise packs to a 2-inch hose. It provides more water. We have a different nozzle that provides more than our standard nozzle. And while these hoses are there most typically for high-rise fires, they do have the ability to come off the truck, use them in situations like this where an increased amount of water is needed. The night at the fire, firefighter Jergen, as he was coming off the hose line, with Lieutenant Wallace behind him, when he came and realized he was not behind him, he called in and reported. As he started coming back out, he stopped. Other crews encountered him. They didn't know who he was. They told him to get out. He did. We realized the need to identify probationary firefighters. Firefighter Jugger did nothing wrong. But we feel it's important that during critical situations, obviously the fire service experience is a major factor. We made the change that we'd identify their helmets with a specific sticker or stickers, that during situations like that, we can identify who they are and maybe better guide them. I won't go down to additional training, but you can see here all the things we've gone back over based off what we identified in that fire, some technology we're looking at. And the last thing currently, real quick, is there are some changes in firefighting methods across the country. The National Institute of Standards and Technology has done a lot of extensive research about the ability to push fire with the hose line, meaning starting at one side of the house and, if not applying correctly, pushing it through the structure. They've had some interesting results. There seems to be a shift more of trying to cool the atmosphere first, even from the outside. A lot of fire departments across the country are currently looking at this practice. We are too. We're going to follow the lead, research what's out there, use their research to our benefit if possible. We're currently looking at making some changes there too that go completely against the grain of how all of us and those before us have fought fires. We still have other changes in the works. We're not We're not going to stop. Continual analysis of what we're doing each day, critiquing each incident to determine, is there a better way? But again, as I said, we're not going to wait. Recommendations from the State Fire Marshal's office, we knew this would take a while to get here. We will look at theirs as well. But as you can tell after reading that report, we've imposed more on ourselves than outside agencies. And that says a lot for the people of this organization. Again, many, many hours were spent, dedicated hours, trying to figure out what we can learn. I want to speak, too, real quick of the report we talked about, getting the word out to other fire departments. These reports are valuable. I want to emphasize that we as the department have learned over the years from other departments from these type reports. Other departments have been through tragedies, close calls, etc. These reports come out. They're very valuable to look at what happened there, determine why it happened, if possible, and ensure we don't do the same thing or have policies and procedures in place to make sure it doesn't happen here. Again, we have looked at this from every angle. We're dedicated to operating as safely as possible. It's our obligation, not only to the members of our organization, but to the community that we serve, that we are the best we can be. And that's been our goal days after the fire, through all these changes, and that will be our goal from here forward. Other questions? We have shifted priority to inspections. Mark, would you like to talk on inspections a little bit and such?
The inspections are very important, of course, to getting accomplished. The inspections are very important to get accomplished throughout the community. Of course, adding the additional inspector, it's going to take about a year to get them trained. But that is one of our priorities. Identifying these properties through a hazard risk assessment is one of our priorities currently, and hopefully we'll be able to get that through with that very quickly. Well, the process of an inspection, oftentimes we go in, look at a property, give them some time to make the corrections that we've identified, and then work from there. Of course, we are part of this community, so it's important to work with our partners. You know, the building owners and occupants it's important to them, too, to make sure their occupancies are safe. We're there to help encourage that.
Yes, sir. It's been some significant investments. Again, we've had the support of our city to do these things. I'm just trying to run through numbers. Just the equipment alone, upgrades we've made, it's been over $100,000. Personnel are very expensive. Again, we added six last year. I believe that cost was somewhere in the $400,000 range. We're going to continue to add more people. Money's always an issue, and it's easy to think that, well, just go do all this stuff. Well, we all know that's not true. It's certainly not true in our personal lives. But we're going to continue to move forward. And again, I feel blessed, our department does, to have the support that we do. And we're confident we're going to continue to move forward, make whatever changes we need to make, and get where we need to be on our staff. Anyone else? In closing, I want to say again, thank you for being here today. It's hard to describe the impact of this event on us, and it will be with us in some regards for the rest of our lives. We lost two very good men. They made us laugh a lot. They made us who we are, not just professionally, but personally. Two men over here, Firefighter Ricky Manta and Firefighter Moran. Some of the strongest people I've ever met. But we move forward. We never forget. And we continue to grow as a family. And I tell you what, I just again want to say that you look around this room, everybody in blue and white shirts is a very close family, very strong family. And I want to thank every man in the Bryan Fire Department uniform, our civilian employees. It's been a very difficult road, as you can imagine. But I tell you what, as the fire chief of this organization, as I said, I could not be more proud. And we would not be who we are today, we would not be where we are today without everybody in this organization. They are the best, without a doubt. I'm a blessed chief to have them around me. The command staff who supports this department every day are top notch. I want to thank the spouses of the fire department members and their families. They sacrifice a lot. Every day, these men show up, answer the calls. We know the dangers, but that doesn't make it easier. But every family member, every spouse has stood up as part of our family throughout this event, has helped us, has come together, has supported us, and we're just extremely grateful for every one of them. My prayer is that we will never endure an incident like this again, ever. I pray that our family never goes to an event like this. But you do realize the true heart of people when they have to. And I'm telling you, we have the best. Thank you very much.